Hello, my clear voices, and welcome back. And what a time it has been. Can you believe it? I think we're all kind of over it now, aren't we? The whole, can you believe it? Well, I'm not quite. I feel like every day it's a kind of roller coaster of, I'm totally fine with this. And then reality hits. And then I'm like, oh, and then kind of go back to, yeah, I'm totally fine with this. I'm winning. And then reality hits and it's just all very exhausting. So anyway, we're back. New series, new guests. We're kicking off this week with someone very special. But before I tell you about that, I just want to make sure we've got lots of new listeners, loads of people in India. So hello. Hello, everybody. Don't forget, you need to follow us on Instagram at Clear Voice Official if you want to have the whole Clear Voice experience. I'm doing lots of webinars, all about getting your voice heard in video calls, and don't we know, isn't that a challenge? So do follow us on Instagram, and there's lots of fun stuff on there. So this week, in December, pre-corona. Back in December 2019, very, very organised I was, yes, always planning ahead. I spoke to Molly Brown, who is the former education manager at Hey Girls. Hey Girls is an incredible social enterprise, and what they do is they create buy one, give one menstrual products. So anytime you buy tampons from them, they also donate the same tampons, well, not the same tampons, obviously, but another pack to a local food bank or school or organisation in your area. Incredible charity. Social enterprise. They are still running in these pandemic times. So if anyone wants to get their tampons, pads, period pants, reusable anything, moon cup, any of that delivered, go on their website. Everything. It's all there, delivered to your door. Isn't that amazing? And as well as creating the menstrual products, they also do a huge amount of education around periods. And Lord knows, don't we not need that? Yes, we do. So they go into public spaces, they go into schools, they go into workplaces, and they talk about period poverty and periods and menstruation and menopause and anything period related. And that is exactly what Molly and I talked about 6 months ago now. And do you want to hear it? Yes, you do. So let's go. This week I have Molly Brown from Hey Girls, and I think that she has travelled the longest distance of any of our podcast guests. Molly, where have you come from?
Edinburgh.
And how long was the train journey?
Well, it should have been 4.5 hours, but there was certain delays on the train, so...
Fun times and potentially a fire, but it's all good.
The fire was averted. It was all fine.
Oh my goodness. The lengths that people go to come on this podcast. I love it so much. I feel very honoured. And so tell me about you and what you're doing.
I am the Education and Impact Manager for Hey Girls, which is a social enterprise aiming to eliminate period poverty in the UK.
Amazing. Totally super, super cool. And so elaborating on that, what are the kind of things that the organisation does within the communities?
So we launched in January 2018, and I think we knew at that point that there was a problem with period poverty in the UK, although it was still quite new. People weren't really sure what that looked like, how that worked. But we could see that there was a problem in terms of access to products, and that there was a need for a sustainable solution to that. My boss and the founder of Hey Girls, Celia, was a very experienced social entrepreneur and had been working with social enterprises for many years. And she'd actually basically retired and thought that that was it. And then all this stuff about period poverty hit the news around March 2017. And Celia was like, right, okay, we'll do this. And her solution was to fix the problem through business and business for good. So what we do is we manufacture plastic-free period products, and for every pack that we sell, we donate one to somebody that needs it. And that buy one, give one model has so far enabled us to donate over 6 million period products to people in need.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. And you're also telling me that part of your job is training people who are purchasing period products for public spaces?
Yeah, so there's obviously one of the problems we're looking to solve is period poverty, which is around access to products and people not being able to afford or not having access to appropriate products to manage their periods. But there's also a much wider problem, I think, around stigma and shame with periods. And my sort of remit as education and impact manager is around trying to fix that problem or moving towards fixing that problem. And that looks like training, that looks like lesson plans and resources for schools, and that looks like making sure that when we are giving out free period products, we're giving them out in a way that is dignified. Now, you might know that in Scotland, we have a very wonderful left-wing government, which has really championed the access to free period products as a policy. And they've spent £9 million in the last year on providing free products, first in schools, colleges and universities. And then there was a tranche of money set aside for charities and community groups. And most recently, they've introduced products in all public buildings. So your library, your swimming pool, the job centre, the community centre, the youth club, everywhere should soon, and that they're still getting it rolled out at the moment, but should soon have free period products in the toilets with a big sign saying help yourself. We've been really involved in trying to make sure that they're doing that in a way that's dignified, in a way that's plastic free and eco-friendly, but also in a way that makes sure that people have genuine access to products that they need.
Incredible. And it's just, it still boggles my mind that that isn't happening everywhere all the time.
They're like, it's like, imagine if you went into a loo and there wasn't loo roll. You'd be pretty exactly. annoyed. Like, yeah. I think we're trying to make period products as sort of ubiquitous and as easily accessible as toilet paper.
Yeah, and they should be. I find it hard to articulate how messed up it is that it's not. And there's this kind of thing around it that, no, you should be able to buy your own. It's bring your own tampons. This life is bring your own tampons, and it shouldn't be.
But not only bring your own tampons, bring your own plastic filled, massively mocked up, profit making tampons that no doubt the profit's going to some American man. Like,
probably.
There's a massive markup on everything you've ever bought in a supermarket, but there's particularly large markups on some products. And the way, the reason that we're able to do this buy one, give one, is that it turns out it's possible to make two packs of plastic-free, ethically sourced, we've checked which factory this comes from, and vegan and nice for the world and biodegradable pads for roughly the same price as one pack of mass-produced plastic rubbish ones.
And wow. And presumably these are better for your body as well.
Yeah, I mean, the vulva is one of the most absorbent parts of your body, and it is better for you to not have it close to bleached or otherly toxically intoxicated products.
Yeah.
Lots of products are made of plastic, and lots of the women that we speak to when we're giving out products say that they find normal pads make them quite itchy.
Yeah.
That might be because of the chemicals in them. That might be because lots of them are scented, because women have been told for maybe 100 years now that they're dirty and smelly and therefore they need to buy strangely fragranced products. Yeah. But also plastic makes you hot and sweaty down there. And it's not the best environment for your vulva.
Totally. And also, we're doing this for young women as well. We want there to be a world in which these young women can live. And there's no point us throwing plastic into the oceans and messing up our entire ecosystems, just like for what?
We don't really know how long plastic takes to decompose because we've not had it for long enough. But if it's true that it's 500 years, something that struck me as horrific was the idea, you know, Shakespeare was 500 years ago. Shakespeare's woman that he writes all his sonnets to, all her pads would still be here. All 11,000 of them that a woman gets through in her lifetime. It's like, it's quite gross as a concept.
It is, isn't it?
And I mean, a lot of people flush period products down the toilet. That's partly to do with shame, but that's also just lack of education. If no one within your close circle of friends or your mom or whoever it is has told you not to flush them, people flush them. And almost every single training I've ever done, and you know, we've not been going that long, but there's always someone in the room that goes, oh, that was me, I didn't know until now, nobody told me not to flush my tampon down the loo. Didn't occur to me at all. But tampons and pads are the fifth most common item found on UK beaches. It's quite grim, the level of period products that there are in the loos and in the ocean. And I think people assume that the sewage system will catch it, but obviously, not obviously, if it rains and the sewage system is overflowing or whatever, then they just open the gates and anything really? You've ever flushed down the loo, rubber ducks, tampons, condoms, the whole lot ends up in the sea and won't biodegrade because it's not an appropriate place for plastic applicators to biodegrade.
I did not know that at all.
It's a bit nuts.
Yeah.
And if you think about a plastic applicator, you use it for what? 3 seconds? 5 seconds? Yep. And then that's it for 500 years. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
We started by just making what we call digital applicators, which means you put them in with your fingers. Not that they're in some way tech inclined.
I love that. You program it, it's automated.
It means you put them in with your fingers. But loads and loads of people, particularly schools, were saying, you know, girls don't want they don't want to have their fig blood on their finger. They're much more comfortable with applicator tampons. And we were like, well, this creates waste, but also we really don't want to have a plastic applicator. So we worked really hard and we actually found one based, a bio-based sugarcane applicator, which biodegrades. Which is really cool. And you can't really tell the difference. It feels pretty similar to the plastic ones, but obviously, even though it will biodegrade, it's better to not have the waste at all.
Definitely.
Which is why we've been doing a lot of work around menstrual cups and cloth pads, and trying to not only make those affordable, but also promote those, just to the general public, but in particular with our donation partners, making sure that low-income vulnerable women have access to reusable products. Because,
yes.
I mean, ultimately, if you can give someone a menstrual cup and that lasts them 10 years, in terms of the environment, that's brilliant. But also in terms of income, and if you're talking about low-income people who are struggling for money or whatever is going on, that's them sorted. They don't need to worry about spending money on tampons every month. Like, it's a real game changer, I think.
When I first started using a menstrual cup, it was a complete revelation that I didn't need to worry about being caught short in the way like, oh, I'm in the house and I don't have any tampons or I don't have any pads. And it's just there. And also, I don't need to worry about spending money on it. And like, do I buy these branded ones and they're more expensive, or the own brand ones, are they going to be as good? Like, that, all of that is completely taken out of your head. You don't have to worry about it. And then also, I found that because it's inside you all the time, you're also not caught short when you're out. You don't need to worry about, oh, I've used my last tampon, what do I do? Because you're like, huh, it's already inside me. I'm just going to empty it and we'll start again.
Totally.
It's brilliant.
And they're safer, they're cleaner. You're much less likely to get toxic shock from a menstrual cup. I think there's been one instance in the history of menstrual cups ever.
Really?
Yeah, and some people...
It's amazing.
It's totally amazing. And some people report that they have less pain. Tampons absorb everything, so you can feel very dry, and it can be quite painful, particularly towards the end of your period, because they've absorbed...
Do not get me started.
Everything.
The worst.
Menstrual cups don't. They just sort of sit there lovingly collecting the blood and doing their thing. What really gets me about cups is they were invented... The first patent for a menstrual cup was in the 1930s. Invented by a woman.
Really?
For women. Yep. And some dude with a not marketing budget invented the tampon, and that's what people bought because that was where the investment and the finance was. It's a much less good product.
Oh my God.
It's so annoying. To be fair, I think early menstrual cups were quite difficult to use because in terms of materials that were available, I think a lot of them were rubber, which is less pliable. Now that we've got...
I do struggle with the silicon one sometimes, so I can imagine that rubber would have been really intense.
Although some people still make them out of rubber. It depends how you process it, I think. But yeah, they've got much more into the public consciousness in the last maybe year and a half. I think that they've suddenly, people have started to notice them on a much wider scale.
Definitely. I mean, I remember when I was at school, it was very much like, ooh, moon cup, ah, that's disgusting. And I think there is still a lot of that, but it's much less so. And people are much more accepting of it and are trying it. And once I tried it, I was like, this is revolutionary.
It's totally revolutionary. And I think what's nice about these things is that once you know someone who's tried it, you're more likely to try it.
Yeah.
And I think it is spreading and growing, not necessarily because anybody's advertising it, because the menstrual cup market is still tiny compared to the huge multinational corporations that sell disposable products. But I think they're massively growing. And I think that's people power. I think that's women talking to their friends and being like, you know what, this is really going to help you. You're an athlete. You're a someone with a heavy period. You're someone that, I don't know, you need a cup in your life. And they really are, they're growing. And there's more and more brands developing loads of different shapes and sizes. And that's fab.
Totally. And so moving, I mean, I could literally sit here and talk about periods all day. No, do not apologize. It's something we need to do. You know, it's periods are not talked about. And they're not talked about between women enough. And they're definitely not talked about between men and women enough.
Definitely, yeah.
And I said it at the end of last series, and I will say it again now, 30% of our listeners are men. And so welcome, men. I really hope you enjoy this and it's very enlightening for you. And periods are not gross, it's just something that happens. And of course, we are a vocal focused podcast. And so Molly, what has your relationship been like with your voice?
I was thinking about this on the bus here, and it's a funny one. I've been very lucky, I think, to have been raised to feel quite confident speaking and speaking out. I'm definitely an extrovert. When you fill in those wee things where you have to tick what you're like, that's me. But I think what comes with that is learning as you get older and more mature when it's appropriate to use your voice and when you're actually being a bit too pushy or a bit too boisterous, or you need to sort of step back a bit. But also trying to work out the relationship between being confident with the act of speaking and being confident in terms of what you're saying. If that makes sense. So yes. If I'm very happy and confident delivering a message that I get behind, that I believe in, that I think is important, I find it more difficult, and I'm sure lots of other young women will associate with this, to deliver a message where it's my idea, or in some way it's a bit more, you feel a bit more vulnerable because you're putting yourself out there. Mm. And at that point, I definitely find myself doing all the things that you're not supposed to do, like apologizing, like making really silly long sentences because you're kind of hiding your point at the end of sentence 4 or 5, and going round and round in circles to try and make it a bit more gentle and sort of hide what you're trying to say. And I know that this is something I need to practice, and that I should be someone who can go into a meeting and be like, I think this is the right thing. I'm demonstrating leadership. But it's really hard, and it can be really hard.
Definitely, definitely. And what advice would you give to someone that's also having that problem?
I don't know, I guess just practice. I don't have this problem loads and loads and loads, but I definitely think it's something that the more you put yourself out there and you put yourself in positions where you're stretching yourself a little bit here and a little bit there, that comes through.
Definitely. And I think also the stretching can be, so maybe you put yourself in a less intimidating situation. Mm-hmm. You start small,
yeah,
and then working up. So definitely. That kind of stretching of that, rather than like going into the lion's den, as it were, just being a bit more friendly. Brilliant. And has there been a time when you really felt like you didn't have a voice?
Well, again, I feel like I've been very lucky in my professional life. I've mostly only worked for very small organisations, by which I mean really like fewer than 15 people, and often very flat structures, so you feel able to walk into your boss's office and have a chat with them. And I've mostly, since I graduated, been reporting to a female line manager or a female CEO, which I think helps a lot. So I don't feel like professionally within a working team that I've ever not had a voice. I've been very, very lucky in that respect. But I've definitely been in meetings where I feel like other people around the table don't expect you to have something to say, or don't expect you to have a voice. And I don't feel like I've been silenced, but I've definitely gone to things where they see you, you're young, you're a girl, and they kind of expect you to be person that's taking notes, or the sort of the junior someone. Yes. You know, and I used to joke in my previous job, I was basically a consultant supporting charities and social entrepreneurs around Scotland, and even though I was doing the same job as some of my much older colleagues, and I would lead the project and write the report and do all the research and take the thing from start to finish, I would still feel like in that first initial meeting that I needed to bring a grown-up with me. And nobody in my job thought that I needed to bring a grown-up with me. I mean, they weren't saying, you have to take a grown-up, but I would say, I really think we should have a grown-up at this meeting, because clients expect there to be someone with a little bit more grandeur, I guess, and don't expect a woman at that point. I was, what, 24? They don't expect a 24-year-old to be leading a consultancy project for them.
And so we talk on the podcast about having an advocate and how actually sometimes it is really important to have that advocate there, because as much as ultimately in that situation you are completely capable, you can do your job, you do it from start to finish, sometimes some people's imaginations cannot stretch that far, and you do need someone to advocate for you.
Yeah.
In addition to having that advocate, was there anything else? Did you feel like you needed to prove yourself? Did you feel like you needed to push out and speak out more? How else did you handle it?
I think it slightly depended who the client was. In many cases, once they've had the first meeting and there's been a grown-up there, they're very happy to continue to work with you. And it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that you're the person that knows what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. It is quite useful having a backup grown-up, I think, sometimes. And I've quite enjoyed having that security, certainly in that job, because then if anything goes wrong or somebody starts to be difficult or a client starts to be whatever, then you're just like, okay, you can speak to the grown-up now. But I know that moving forwards and in terms of professional development and career development, that it's important to stretch yourself and try and do more of that leadership thing and not hide behind somebody else. Or, I mean, I guess it's imposter syndrome, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, and I heard something really interesting about imposter syndrome. It was at a panel talk. Of course, it's always a panel talk, isn't it, on female leadership. One of the women speaking was saying that, and I do agree with this to an extent. She said, imposter syndrome is, if you're a woman and you have imposter syndrome, you need to forget about it because you're a woman and you've got this far already. So you're not an imposter. Yeah. You've had to work twice as hard as anyone else. And that was, I don't think it's quite that clean cut. But it was very interesting. It really made me think, like, oh, actually, yeah, I get that. And what about a time when you really felt like you did have a voice?
I feel like I have a voice at the moment. I feel really happy and supported. And we have such a great team at Hey Girls. Like, it's not quite all female team. We now have one man, which is great for diversity. And
we've got to help the men out. We do, you know, give them a job. Let the man a little bit of money, have a little bit of power.
No, he's fab. He's been around from the beginning. He's brilliant. But the point is, the team is fab. I feel really, really supported. And I feel like we have a really important message. I feel like we're really involved in something that's quite contemporary, quite cutting edge. I mean, periods aren't new, but I do feel like it really has been the last maybe 2 years since we've been around, but maybe a bit before that periods have really come into their own and come into public consciousness. I feel really proud to be part of that, but I also feel like we're doing really important work, and in particular some of the education stuff that I'm doing, I think has been really interesting and really important. And what I am quite honoured to be doing now is using my voice, I guess, to help other people share their stories. And it's not really about me, it's more about the people that I meet, and the fact that I do this job means that from a party with some friends through to a professional environment, through to working with some young people in a youth club, through to doing a session with some vulnerable women in a kind of social work context, everybody talks to me about their periods all the time, and it's great, but a bit feeling like you are somebody that people feel comfortable sharing those stories with is really great. And I mean, you know, we were doing an event a few weeks back, and the security guard came up to me and was like, really cool that you're doing this. I have stage 4 endometriosis and I'm now a raw vegan. Amazing. Wow. Like the people coming up and saying, oh, I remember when back in the day this happened to me and my mum said this, and all, like, there's just so many stories that people come out with, of all ages. And what's really great, and we were talking about men slightly jokingly, but the number of men that are really on board and really behind what we're doing has been fab. We did an amazing campaign in March this year with Michael Sheen called Pads for Dads. And
oh,
the point
that's
there,
such a great name.
The point there was that, you know, if you're a bloke, you've probably been systematically excluded from conversations
totally.
About periods
yeah.
for the whole of your life. Maybe you had a forward-thinking mom or surrounded by sisters or your girlfriend or your partner or whoever told you about them, but probably only once and you probably don't really get it. And then suddenly you're there with a 10-year-old girl who's bleeding and crying and you need to be the person that's like, this is how a pad works, on you go. So I think it's really important, not just for divorced dads, gay dads, single dads, widowed dads, people that where there isn't a female in the household, but it's important, I think, for all men in a caring role to be able to have that chat and to also be able to have that chat with their sons so that this is more normal. And I can't remember why I started saying this, but I think it's important in terms of voice to have lots of voices.
Yes, exactly. Using your voice for other people's voices to be heard. I totally agree. And I think it's, we can never expect our periods to be understood in like the workplace or in society if we don't include men in the conversation. They are half of the population. If we exclude them, it's just, you can't, it's just not going to work. If you can't expect a room full of people to understand your message if you only speak to half of them in a different room and then go back into the other room and be like, oh, so guys, does anyone want to have a chat about this? No one knows what's going on.
One of the things that we're doing at the moment is trying to persuade schools to talk about periods more. Normally you get your one girl puberty session when you're maybe 10 years old, and in that session they do boobs and pubes and sweat and armpit hair, and then at the end they're like, and you're going to bleed once a month, here's a pad, bye. That's a lot of information to absorb when you're 10, and I think one of the problems is that schools often don't talk about it basically ever again. And throughout secondary school, 50% of your pupil population are bleeding every month and you don't talk about it ever. But worse, often when you do that girl puberty chat, and not always, it does depend on the schools, the boys get sent out to play football, or maybe the boys get sent out to do the boy puberty lesson. And I think what's really poisonous is the wrong word, but I think what's really pernicious about this is that for some reason schools and many people seem to think that the boy and girl equivalent of puberty need to be talked about as equivalent. So everybody's going to get armpit hair, everybody's going to grow, everybody's going to sweat, la li la li la. Boys, you're going to get wet dreams, girls, you're going to get periods. Not the same. Basically,
yes, that's a very good point to make.
Basically, what you're saying to boys is, it's okay, you're a sexual being, you're going to have these great dreams, and yeah, it's a bit awkward and your sheets are going to be wet, but like, you're cool. I don't think anybody's ever taken a 10-year-old girl aside and been like, you're going to have sexy dreams and you're going to want to touch yourself and you're a sexual being and sex is good and that's cool. Instead, you teach the boys that, and then you take the girls aside and you're like, you're going to bleed once a month and it's your job to bear pain and bear children and shut up and get on with it, and we're not going to talk about this ever again. Good luck.
Yeah, and no mention of sexual pleasure or any of that. And then we wonder why we all have pretty shit sex. Well, maybe I'm speaking for myself. Until you learn to advocate for yourself in the bedroom. But, exactly. You know, it takes a while.
But nobody knows that they have three holes down there. The number of people that I've spoken to where there's girls and they're, you know, a girl recently was saying, oh, well, if I wear a menstrual cup, how do I pee? And I was speaking to a sexual health worker and she said she would ask someone for a urine sample and they were like, oh, that's annoying because I've just put a tampon in. Wow. Different hole. Like, but people don't know that. But they don't know that because nobody's taught them. It's not their fault. Schools, I think, feel really worried about going into this sort of area because parents, when they hear their children are having what comes under the brand of sex education, get freaked out that schools are going to teach them to have sex. Mm. Like, no, what schools are mostly teaching your children is, this is what your body does. Here are the names for the correct parts of your body. Like, a lot of that kind of stuff, which is really important. I feel like all parents should want their children to know how many holes they have.
Absolutely. That's lesson one. But also, I think, to pick up your point about schools teaching people how to have sex, maybe it's not school's job, maybe it is, I don't know. In certain countries in Scandinavia, they do talk about pleasure and they do have, that is part of the sex education. Mm. And, you know, I think that is important, especially when a lot of people are getting their sex education from porn, where female pleasure is at the bottom of the list.
Yep.
Bottom, excuse me. bottom of the list of things that are going on in that. And that, I mean, I was watching a talk with Erica Lust, who's a porn director and the founder of This Much I Know, which is an Instagram news channel, about the language around porn and how all porn titles are like, woman is punished, woman abused, like all of these things that people are supposedly getting off on. It's like, what? No, we need to take hold of that narrative and change it and redefine it.
Yeah, and sex ed is changing. I mean, England's new relationships and sex education curriculum will become compulsory in September 2020. Scotland's just released a new relationships, sexual health and parenthood education programme. They're much better than they were. We're quite keen for there to be more periods on the curriculum, both of them. And we just think it's so important. And also what we... know is that periods are not about sex, and I think that they need to sit separately. And in fact, England's put them under health instead of under sex, which is great. But when you have a chat with a 15-year-old about periods, it often goes into other things around sex and consent and pleasure and contraception. And there's a huge amount of, there's a huge lack of knowledge, I think, there. And it would be really useful for people to just know more about their own body, I guess.
Definitely, definitely. And how are you using your voice for change now?
I am using my voice for change by training loads of people. I've trained 270 something people this year in how to deliver proper menstrual health education, including, you know, what is a menstrual cup and how do you show people how it works, but also stuff around how to distribute products, stuff around, you know, menopause, endometriosis, various different menstrual health issues that might arise. But we're also working really closely with local authorities around the procurement of products, but also around distribution, basically. I did some research for my master's that I did last year at the same time as working for Hey Girls. And what was really interesting about that, speaking to schoolgirls in Glasgow, was that even though some of their schools had made products available, you don't necessarily feel like they're genuinely available if you have to go and ask a teacher.
No, that's not available. Yeah.
Yeah. Particularly within a school context where maybe you've got 10 minutes for break and you've got to get from your geography lesson to the school office, ask someone in a public place with lots of people walking past, and then get to the toilet then change your pads and then get to the maths lesson.
And then be asked why you're late.
In front
of everyone.
In front of everybody. I mean, even, you know, girls, there's so much stigma. Girls feel worried changing their pad in toilet cubicles because they think the girl in the toilet cubicle next door will hear the, like,
oh yeah, I was worried about that being changed.
Everybody's, yeah. I mean, it's a real worry. Being outed as a menstruator is a real fear. And I think one of the things we need to be really careful about in terms of the discourse around period poverty is that these products, that the messaging when they go out isn't around poverty, but is around dignity and equality. Mm. If you say to a bunch of children, period poverty is a thing, 1 in 10 of you struggle to afford products, which is true, there are now free products in the toilet. Understandably, young people equate these products are for poor people. And that what that does is that attaches a stigma to the products. So not only are you having to go and get something that means everybody knows you're bleeding and likely they tell the boys and go, ooh, she's on her period. Yeah. But also you feel like you're outing yourself as someone who can't afford them and as someone who's poor. And what we know from, well, common sense, but also from loads of studies around things like free school meals, is that no one, especially if you're a teenager, wants to out themselves as being somebody that's in financial difficulty. Nobody wants to be the person who has to ask for help. And there's a massive stigma there. So we need to be really careful when we're giving out products in a school context particularly, but also just in general, whether you're the library, whether you're the youth club, whether you're the food bank, whoever you are, you need to make sure that it's something that you're not making people ask for, but also that they can feel like they're accessing it in a genuinely dignified way. And the messaging is, you know, take what you need when you need it. We've got you. Yeah. You're cool, rather than you're poor. Here's the thing to help you.
Well, yeah. And how do you find delivering those trainings, especially to people who maybe don't menstruate?
Yeah, we get most of the trainings I do are mostly with women, but there's often a token boy, and normally they're the person that someone's dragged along because they're most likely to be up for the chat. So we speak to a lot of really amazing male allies. I think the trouble with training and with doing anything that's voluntary is that perhaps the people that most need to be in the room are the people that aren't in the room. But you know, we'll get there. And I think one of the really cool things, particularly about the Scottish government policy, is that it's really generated conversations at all levels. So from Holyrood and sort of government parliamentary conversations all the way down to if you are the community centre, you're now thinking about how we're going to put these products in the toilet. If you're the school, then the deputy head and the head and the head of pastoral care, and you know, lots and lots of people are having to talk about pads and tampons in a way that they never had to before, including the public procurement person who's sitting in the council, who's having to buy products that they have never had to use before on behalf of the whole of the local authority. And I think what's really cool is that those conversations, even just happening, is really changing things already, and it's bringing periods out into the open. It's meaning that female colleagues are having to say to male colleagues, like, yeah, probably they're going to want this, this and that. And the man's like, oh, wings, what's that? You know, there's
essential.
Essential. That's what it is. Or not, depending who you are. It's all personal preference. But I think it's really changing the way that we talk about it. And it's been really empowering and just a great learning experience for everybody, I think.
Definitely. And it's so essential, all these conversations. It makes me so excited. I, for one, love talking about periods. But, but I, you know, I know a lot of people don't. And I went to school with people who didn't want to use tampons because they didn't want to touch themselves there. And I think, you know, the more that we can talk about it and the more that we can make women, or people who have periods, feel comfortable with their bodies and know that it's a natural thing and destigmatize everything, I think the further that we're going to get just as a society.
Totally. And I think it's a health inequalities thing as well. Mm. We know that the patriarchy means that women's health is taken less seriously than men's health. We know that women's pain is often downgraded or assumed, oh yeah, you'll just get on with it. All of that kind of
and also
stuff.
Within women, yeah, that women of colour, their pain is taken far less seriously, and that Black women and women of colour are 5 times more likely to die in childbirth than a white woman.
It's horrendous. It's totally
awful.
Horrendous.
And as white, as anyone that's a white woman, it's important to speak up about that and really challenge if you see any of that.
Totally. And I think, but I think it's also, it's not just a racial dimension. I think intersectionally, mm-hmm. it has also got a class dimension. Mm. And I've certainly worked with women who've been referred to this particular program by social work, really low income, really struggling. This particular woman had a miscarriage and her periods had been really, really erratic ever since. She went to her doctor and said, hey, I really, like, you need to sort this out. I'm bleeding all over the place. It's really, really painful. It's really, really sore. And she was telling, she was very upset actually, because her doctor had kind of gone on a barrage of questions and what about this and have you been having sex and this woman said to me, she's like, you know what, like, I just left and I don't think I'm going back. And I'm thinking, this is horrific. Yeah. Because you're someone that's having a real problem, there's something going on with your health, your doctor has made you feel like you don't deserve to be there. And if a doctor had said that to a white middle class person who wasn't intimidated by, yes, professionals, they would find another doctor, they would go back and argue, they would fight the case, they'd be able to have a kind of connection of people who'd say, oh, you should speak to so and so, or they'd get private healthcare, and they would find it much easier to get proper HRT, hormone replacement therapy if they're menopausal. We know so many women who aren't put on HRT even though they really need it. We've signed so many people who get stuck for years and years on a bad hormonal contraceptive, yeah, because they didn't know that they were allowed to ask for a more expensive one with fewer side effects. We know that there's still, I think, a 7-year gap between getting endometriosis and being diagnosed with, yeah, endometriosis. There's so many problems around women's health and lack of awareness, and part of that is a lack of medical research, which just doesn't really exist. We know way more about erectile dysfunction than we know about the menstrual cycle.
What a surprise.
But like, it's also women don't feel able to talk about that part of their body, which means that they don't go and get help.
And also when you do go and get help, you have to, it's uncomfortable.
You have to fight for it.
You have to fight for it. But also, you know, it's such a personal part of your body. And I think for women, it's different because the male genitalia is outside of the body. Obviously, I'm speaking from a point of not having male genitalia. However, it's so intimate and people are inserting things inside you. It is cold. It is uncomfortable. It is sometimes painful. Mm-hmm. And knowing... we don't go to the dentist. So definitely not going to go... It's like, you know, it's the vaginal version of the dentist.
Yeah.
You know? And so no one's queuing up being like, yes, please, take me to the dentist. So, you know, when we do think about it, it's the last thing you want to do, really.
Totally. But also, I think people don't know what's normal. And there's been an attitude of put up and shut up for so many years.
Yes.
And if
perpetuated
you...
Perpetuated within the health service as well.
Within the health service, but also within in between women, right? Mm. If you only speak to a very small circle of friends and maybe your mum and maybe some siblings about your periods, and you say to your pal, oh, my periods really hurt today. And your pal says, oh, yeah, me too, have a paracetamol. You have no idea that maybe person A is experiencing chronic crippling pain and has a medical condition, and person B gets a slightly sore belly for half an hour, which is solved by paracetamol. Like, we have no rating scale, but also because there's no discussion in school or even wider society about what's normal, about what, when do you go to a doctor about your periods, I think a lot of people don't seek help when they should.
Totally. And also, you know, I had a real moment when I was leading a choir rehearsal, and my male colleague was there as well, and we were co-leading, and he was conducting some pieces, I was conducting another. I was on the first day of my period and I was in crippling pain. And you know, when you just like, you really just want to sit down or be in bed with a hot water bottle, preferably just not doing anything, not moving. And I just had a moment of like, number one, he has no idea of what's going on. Number two, I'm not speaking up about this, and I would feel uncomfortable. I wouldn't feel uncomfortable saying I'm on my period, but I would feel like he would perceive me as weak and using excuses.
Yep.
Because I'm using my period, quote unquote, as an excuse to not do work. And it's just like, I didn't say anything. But it really stuck with me how unjust it is and how we do need to speak up.
We do.
And we need to make part of the conversation.
It is difficult. It depends on your working environment, I think. And I know that people fear and have feared for years speaking up, because periods have been used to disqualify women for everything from running from US president because, oh, you'll be too hysterical, to being an astronaut, to there's so many different things that men have used to keep women out of stuff because they bleed. But I think there is a better balance there. One of the things my colleague's working on is a period dignity in the workplace campaign, and she's calling on employers to buy period products for staff, put them in the staff bathroom. And because everything we do is buy one, give one, if you, the, I don't know, investment bank, tech startup, whoever you are, if you buy 100 packs of tampons for your staff, we will donate 100 packs of tampons to your local homeless charity, food bank, whoever it is.
Amazing.
Double benefit. But also, it just feels like it's just the right thing to do.
Yeah.
If you're a female CEO, I mean, even if you're a male CEO, if you're a CEO or you employ anybody, like, you wouldn't let them go, as we were saying before, without loo roll. So why are you letting people go without pads and tampons? And that's the thing around medical conditions. So if you have PCOS, your periods are much more irregular. If you're menopausal, your periods are much heavier, but also totally erratic. So just supporting women of those ages, but also trying to use that as a way of opening the conversation. And maybe you need special leave if you have endometriosis and you've got crippling pain, or you need to go in for an operation, which may even just be an exploratory operation to diagnose you, not even an operation to make you better. Maybe you need to take a day off work because you're really bleeding very heavily and you're menopausal. But I think people need the flexibility to be able to ask for those things and not feel like they need to put up and shut up and get on with it.
Absolutely.
And present it in a board meeting when you have a massive hot flush and you're bleeding everywhere. Like, nobody would ask a man to do that.
No, and equally, like, no one would ask, if you were vomiting everywhere, no one would ask you to do it.
No.
And it's not quite the same, but it's similar. So buying for the workplace, is that a thing that people can do through Hey Girls?
Totally, yeah.
Amazing. And they would just go on the website and we'll get in touch.
If you're buying in bulk, get in touch. If you're buying just for you, or you want to buy a subscription, or you want to donate, maybe you don't have periods yourself, but you want to be an ally, then you can do all of that on the website. the way that the world works is if you buy in bulk, then it's a different price. So get in touch. And we stock a lot of public sector buildings, so schools and colleges and universities and all of those types of people. But we're also working more and more with businesses. And because that's buy one, give one, then that's extra benefit.
Amazing. Molly, it's been enlightening and fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Clear Voice podcast. I have loved having you. And in these odd times, it is nice to have distractions and things from the past that make us feel normal again. I hope that it's helped you. And gosh, I definitely learned a lot. So next week, I'm speaking to Madam Storm. Yes, that's right. The one and only international dominatrix, Madam Storm. And we talk all things empowerment, confidence, and most importantly, being yourself. And yeah, that might actually sound terrifying, but flip it round and it is the most powerful thing you can ever do. If you want to hear more, you've got to tune in next week. So don't forget, follow us on Instagram @ClearVoiceOfficial, and I will see you next week.